Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host. The segment you're about to hear originally ran as part of Comic Geek Speak Episode 113, which was released on March 6th, 2006.
So, we're going to revisit our new monthly topic here, and the numbers.
The Mayo Report.
That's right, the Mayo Report.
So Brian's going to get John Mayo on the phone, and he has a look at, they released January's numbers a couple weeks back, and he uses his own kind of methods and looks at those and looks at some other charts. He's got a whole bunch of things that he picked out that he wants to spotlight, so we'll give him the next couple minutes as Brian gets him on the phone.
Hello, John.
Yes.
Hey, John, it's Brian Deemer. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Very well. You're on the air with all the guys.
Cool.
Hi, John.
Hi.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing all right. How about all you guys?
Very well.
Pretty good.
Excellent.
Cool.
Day by day.
So, we're talking about January numbers. We haven't actually started yet, so you sent... a whole bunch of notes, and you sent your chart, your top 300 chart. So why don't you go ahead and just take it?
Okay, let's start with the market shares, because that seems to be what a lot of people are interested in. I broke them out into three different sections for the market shares. The one is what Diamond provides, which is the overall share. Now, according to that, Marvel had like 42% in units and about 37% in dollars, where DC had 37% for units and 35 for dollars. Everybody else, well under 5%, pretty much. Dark Horse had about 5% in dollars. Image about 3%, little over. That includes everything: comics, trades, and everything else in previews. Now, I tend to find it more interesting just to be looking at the comics or just the trades, because that gives you, you know, kind of a more level playing field for the publishers. And I think gives it a bit more realistic data. So, if you look just at the comics, in January, Marvel had a total of 86 items in the top 300 comics, as did DC. Now, for Marvel, 67 of them were new items, and 19 of them were reorder items. And just within the top comics area, Marvel had an overwhelming majority in units, with about 45% and about the same in terms of the dollar share. So, I mean, it clearly dominated. DC came in a fairly close second with about 40% market share for units and about 39% for dollars. Now, what I found really interesting, though, was Dark Horse this month. Dark Horse only had 11 comics and it had no reorder items this month. And it did about $500,000 in sales for comics. Now, it's only about 3% of the market share. But the really fascinating part is when you compare how it did in trades. In trades, Dark Horse also did about $500,000. Now, in the trade market, or trade area, that's about a 17% market share by units and about a 14% by dollars. So that gives you an idea of, you know, just kind of the size of the pie that these companies are dividing up. Now, likewise, over in the trade area, DC had a fairly strong month with about a 35% market share by unit and about 37 by dollar. Whereas Marvel trailed quite a bit behind that with a 25% market share by unit and about a 31 by dollar. So, when you see that, you know, according to Diamond G, Marvel had a great month and stuff. Well, it did. It was just much stronger in the comic book area than in the trade paperback area. That's pretty much all I have on the market shares for the big guys. Most of the other companies, once you get past, you know, IDW, Image, Dynamic, and Devil's Due, everybody's got like under 0.5% of the market share, either by units or by dollars.
You know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you're looking at these, you know, market share, you know, we often have a topic that comes up sometimes is people say, well, are Image and Dark Horse, are they really independents now because they're so mainstream? But when you look at it, and each of them only have 3% of the market share, you go, that's pretty independent. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it really comes down to how do you want to define the terms. I find it useful to divide it into really three groups. You've got the big boys, which is Marvel and DC. Then you've got this mid-range group, Image, Dark Horse, you know, maybe IDW, certainly CrossGen and Valiant back when they were around. And they do somewhere around, you know, a 5% market share. And then you've got everybody else who's like a 1% or under. And typically, I think everybody will agree those are, you know, kind of the quote-unquote true independents. But to me, it's a nebulous distinction. You know, when you consider the fact that out of the 263 items that were new this month versus, you know, the 37 that were reorder items, which were almost exclusively items from Marvel, DC, or Image. But out of the new items, about three-quarters of them are what we would consider, I guess, mainstream publishers. Marvel, DC, Image, Dark Horse, IDW, and the like. And only about a quarter of them would be what would be considered independent. So, you know, obviously the discussion, both in terms of sales and just comics overall, is almost always going to gravitate towards, you know, Marvel, DC, Image, just because they put out the majority of the material.
Yeah.
All right.
So, or go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to say, what do you have next, then?
I was going to jump into the top 300 comics.
Okay.
Obviously, the number one comic out this month, surprise, surprise, Infinite Crisis number 4. It was down about 13,000 copies from the previous issue, which isn't a bad drop. And that drop includes all the reorder activity from this month for that previous issue, number 3. So really, it's selling pretty strong and pretty consistent, which I see as a good sign.
With two covers, we should make that people aware of that.
That's true. That's a very good point, because it's hard to tell how much of the sales is due to people like me who got both covers, and how much is just, you know, individual readers or whatnot.
Right.
Excellent point.
Now, how many copies did that sell?
That sold around 182,600 copies, according to Comic Buyer's Guide.
Okay.
And for this month, I've been reworking how I'm doing my numbers and stuff, and for this month I'm using the Comic Buyer's Guide numbers. Number 2 item on the list, very interesting, All-Star Superman number 2, and it sold fairly strongly at 124,300 copies or thereabouts. Nice, strong numbers, good numbers for a number 2 slot. What's really interesting, though, is it's down about a little over 50,000 copies from the first issue. I mean, that's just a huge drop. Now, a lot of that is retailers always order big on, you know, a number one, particularly one that got hyped as much as this, and they hadn't had time to really see how those sales did before ordering the number 2 issue.
And there was also, it wasn't a 50-50 split, but there was a variant cover on number 1.
Okay.
There was a Neil Adams variant cover. So for this second one to not have a variant cover and not kind of, that's still kind of an impressive amount.
Well, it's about a 40% drop.
Right.
So, now, from my own vantage point, I thought the second issue was better than the first, but, mm-hmm. I mean, quality has nothing to do with sales.
Right.
I'm really hoping we don't see a similar drop for number 3 and so on, just because, I mean, it's selling really well right now, but, man, 50,000 issue drops can kill a title really quick.
Yeah.
Now, the next three titles I want to talk about are Amazing Spider-Man 528, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 4, and Marvel Knights Spider-Man number 22.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all three of those are part of the big crossover storyline of The Other. All three of those also showed some pretty strong increases this month. Amazing Spider-Man, which is almost always the top-selling Spider-Man title, sold about 95,400 copies, and that's up about 5,400 copies from the previous issue. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man sold 78,600 copies, and that's up about 6,300 copies. And Marvel Knights Spider-Man 22 sold 74,900 copies, and that's up about 2,600 copies. Now, obviously, all of these are due, I think, to the other storyline. There is the whole variant cover issues and stuff like that. I'm not sure if Diamond is tracking those with separate order numbers or not, because one of the titles, it was Amazing Spider-Man 527, sold like, you know, 10,700 copies in reorders. And I'm not sure how much of that's true reorders versus, you know, second printing variant cover. But, you know, whether you like the storyline or not, it's a clear indication that when you do a big event storyline like the other, sales go up. You know, 5,000 or, you know, 6,000 copy jump is very good in this day and age.
To keep having an increase even by the third or fourth issue of that title, that's pretty substantial.
Well, I think a lot of it goes towards, you know, at least myself as a reader, I want to be reading a story that, you know, matters in the overall scheme of the character. And certainly they've been hyping it, you know, Six Ways to Sunday for the other, that this is going to, you know, radically change Spider-Man and, you know, presumably have lasting effects. Whether or not it turns out to be the case or not, time will tell. But, you know, I certainly think that's why even this late into the storyline, you know, we're getting these bumps. You know, the real question is going to be whether these titles can hang on to these new readers. Now, the next title that I found really interesting was Ultimate X-Men number 66. This sold 73,700 copies. Now, that's down only about 600 copies from the previous issue. So, on the surface, it looks to be a fairly stable title. And by and large, I would agree with that. Unfortunately, if you start to take the long look at this title, it's been doing a pretty steady decline since about issue 36, at which point it was selling, you know, over, I believe, 100,000 copies at that point. Now, there have been a few issues like issue 50 and issue 61 where they've had some bumps. But by and large, those bumps last an issue or two, and then this is another one that has the standard attrition, you know, sales cycle. You lose a couple of readers every month or whatnot. Eventually, it catches up to you. Now, whether they're going to be able to do some major event in the Ultimate Universe and, you know, kick this up another, you know, 20, 30,000 issues and then have it swing back down, I don't know.
Didn't they just change the writer on that, too? Somebody big's coming on that? Kirkman. Yeah, Robert Kirkman's coming on, so that...
Yeah.
That should attract some new readers.
I certainly hope so. He's a good writer, and I think he could do a lot with the book. What's really interesting, though, also with Ultimate X-Men, is the Comics and Games Retailer Magazine, which is a sister publication to Comic Buyer's Guide, polls retailers and ranks the titles by how well the retailers say they sell. Now, this is just a numerical ranking. It doesn't give any indication on actual number of copies sold. But what's really interesting is with Ultimate X-Men, for the past couple of months, it's been selling less than, or ranking less than on the sales from retailers to readers than it has on how the retailers have been ordering it, which indicates they've been kind of chasing those numbers down. Hopefully it'll start to level off. Hopefully the new creative team will give it, you know, a shot in the arm. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. Now, the next title I want to talk about is ranked number 17, and it's the Day of Vengeance Infinite Crisis Special. It sold 67,500 copies, which is pretty good. It's only down about 3,000 copies from the last issue of Day of Vengeance, the actual miniseries. So it did lose a few readers, but really not that much. So I think it's a good... strong sign. The Infinite Crisis stuff is really working for DC, and, you know, we'll see how much of this momentum they can carry forward into the 1 year later. Now,
well, if my comic buying this Wednesday is to be any judge, Jesus, I went out of there with all 1 year later that came out this week, even that Blood of the Demon mess.
Oh, you're crazy. I didn't pick that one up.
You didn't pick that one up?
Nope, that one I didn't.
You're a better man than I.
Demon's one of the characters I've just never gotten into, but, you know, based on what I'm reading on the forums and whatnot, a lot of people are seeing this as a good jumping-on point.
Right.
You know, I think a few are also using it as a jumping-off point for titles they were, you know, on the edge on.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But I think it'll do fairly well for DC, at least initially. I mean, it'll be interesting to see in a couple of months how many of these new readers they get they're able to keep.
Right. Yeah, because I saw that you have on here, not to jump around, but, you know, you have Aquaman listed here at 107, Aquaman 38, which the new one-year-later issue is issue 40. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of jump that pushes, what kind of push it gives it.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about Aquaman for a second then. It sold about 18,300 copies, which is down about 1,300 from the previous issue, which is about a 6 or 7% drop. Now, what's interesting is a lot of the reason they're making the changes into the new Aquaman sort of Atlantis, you know, with, you know, all the changes for the 1 year later, is because it was on the chopping block. It was one of those that was under consideration of do we continue with this title or not. So rather than just dump it, they said, well, let's do a major revamp and see what happens.
Right.
So, I mean, that gives us a good indication of kind of where that danger zone is for a mainstream DC book. I mean, once it drops below, you know, 20,000 and stuff, it's, you know, pretty much on life support at best.
You have Marvel Team-Up highlighted at 99. What's that about?
It had a minor drop-off from of about 100 copies, of about 0.5% from the previous issue. It did pretty well in number 14 with Invincible guest starring. And it seems to be starting to level off. If you chart the long-term sales, it's still dropping, but it's almost getting to be a flat line right around 20,000. So I'm hoping, you know, it's found its audience. It should get good word of mouth because, I mean, Robert Kirkman's a, you know, a good writer and has a following. Hopefully we'll start to see it pick up.
Yeah.
It's still a little too close to the danger zone for Marvel title for my comfort level.
Yeah, me too.
Well, not only, yeah, I mean, just because of the quality.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good book, and he's able to, you know, take some characters that just aren't getting the spotlight and whatnot, and, you know, use them and do some stuff with them, which I think is great. You know, it's hard for a character to really get a following with readers if the character is never used. So, you know, the fact that he's using this as kind of a sampler of, you know, aspects of the Marvel Universe that just don't see the light of day that often, I think is great. So,
How about a few more here? What else do you got?
Okay, Superman Shazam First Thunder. It sold just under 49,000 copies, which is a drop of about 5,700, which is about 10%. Now, this is one that, you know, I'm assuming they solicited on a monthly basis, but it's been like 2 months since the previous issue came out, number two, which I attribute a lot of this drop-off for issue three on. And now, you know, we're, what, 2 months later, and I don't think number four has come out either. I mean, it goes back to if you want to build an audience, you've got to do it on a timely basis.
Right.
You know?
Plus, the interest is probably waning off because of all the changes that are happening with Captain Marvel now.
Exactly. Exactly. He was in a totally different place, you know, then versus now. It's been, you know, 4 months since the... Actually, a lot longer than that since the series started. Readers get bored, I think, fairly quickly.
Hey, I want to jump all the way down to 289. You have Atomica listed.
Yes, I do. I was floored by the numbers on this. It's Atomica number 6. It sold 1,200 copies.
Mm-hmm.
That's a drop of about 3,500 copies from the previous issue. Now, the previous issue was also under Mercury, just like this one, so I can't really attribute it to having left Speakeasy and people couldn't find it in the previews or something.
Mm-hmm.
I have no clue why this dropped so hard so fast.
When was 5 listed? Was that previous? Was this, or was there a delay from this issue, or what?
I don't think so. I would have to look that up. I'm pretty sure it's been coming out fairly regularly. I believe it shipped, let's see, number 6 shipped on January 25th, number 5 on December 14th, and number 4, though, had a couple of months prior to that, because that was in August 17th was when number 4 shipped.
Okay.
But we're still only talking about a month between issues 5 and 6, so I don't think it was a delay that caused it.
Do you think maybe the delay between 4 and 5, which was when the actual shift to company happened, to a different company, that was 5 maybe solicited early but just never came out, so that by the time 6 was actually solicited, that's why you're seeing the drop-off?
That could be. That could be. I would have to check when these were actually solicited and whatnot. Certainly, I think the drop between issues 4 and 5, which was about, say, 1,600 copies or whatnot, was due partially to the delay and probably more to switching publishers to going self-published. I think whenever you move a title, you know, around from publisher to publisher, it's easy for retailers and readers just to lose sight of it.
All right, you got here at 188, you got Uncle Scrooge 350. What are you doing to me?
I'm just giving you a hard time.
Okay.
No, actually,
but his numbers went up
pretty good, though, for a non-superhero title. I mean, it's 4,800 copies, only down about 100, so it's selling pretty consistently.
It's expensive, $6.95. Wow.
Yeah, particularly, like you said, when you factor in that that cover price. But, I mean, it's classic Uncle Scrooge stuff. I mean, you can't go wrong with that, I guess.
When my boy picks it out every time we go to the store, and I try to steer him away because $6.95, man, he's just going to destroy it. So I got to wait till he gets a little older before I start paying that kind of money for stuff.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. That's a hefty price tag.
How about, okay, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, I was just curious. You had highlighted the all-new official handbook of the Marvel Universe A to Z.
Yeah, that one, obviously, you guys have talked about quite a bit. I've, you know, read through the first 2 issues, agree with a lot of Jamie's comments on that. It's going to be very interesting to see where this one goes. It started out with number 1 selling 23,400 copies. I expect it's going to have a decent drop-off off in issue 2, probably 3, but by about 4 or 5, I think it's going to find its audience and level out pretty easily there.
As long as they don't cancel it halfway through, I'd be pissed.
There is that concern. There was actually a thread on the forums where somebody was asking, you know, how can they afford to do a 64-page book for $4 when everything else costs, you know, close to that for half the content or whatnot. The nice thing with this title is, I mean, they're not paying for the art, because most of it's just go grab this panel out of, you know, this other comic that we've already done. I don't know who they have doing the write-ups and stuff, but I'm sure they're not paying them. They're paying those people probably on salary versus a page rate.
Exactly.
This is probably a much more economical book to put together, even at the larger size with no ads.
And the cover quality is not the same as what the other official handbooks were. They were cardstock covers, and this one is not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So production values are probably down on this one.
And I don't really think the art on the covers is quite as catching as the one they've done for the individual teams and whatnot.
So give us one more that just because we're running low on time, one more that you really want to spotlight, and then a final wrap-up.
Okay, last one I want to spotlight would be rank 264, and that's Surrogates number 4. It sold 1,500 copies, down about 200 from issue number 2. I don't actually have the numbers for number 3 because it didn't make it onto the charts. I read Surrogates 1 through 4 today. I thought it was a great title. I'll be honest, the art wasn't, you know, the kind of style that I liked, but it was totally functional. I could tell what was going on. And if I were, you know, over in Hollywood looking for something to turn into a summer science fiction blockbuster, this would be something I'd choose. It's a really good title, and it ought to be selling, you know, much, much better than it is.
It'd be interesting to see if they, well, I'm sure Top Shelf will trade that, I mean, because normally all their stuff comes out in graphic novel form, so it was kind of interesting that they went comic book form with it. So it'll be kind of cool to see what kind of interesting format they choose for the trade.
Yeah, and I'm curious how well the trade will do, because typically a trade sells you know, around the 1500 mark or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but yeah, I've really enjoyed it, and you guys need to remind me when the next issue comes out, because I don't have that on my order for DCBS.
Oh, okay.
I was a late adopter on that title.
Somebody write that down. John Mayo surrogates.
That'd be appreciated. Now my private message thing will be filled on the forums.
There you go. Any other overall thoughts about the numbers?
There were a couple of things here and there. I was surprised with Savage Dragon having dropped as much as it did, but then I looked at the history of when it was coming out, and, I mean, they only had two issues released last year. That's got to hurt sales. You guys have talked about that title quite a bit, and I dropped it with issue 112 when I switched over from shopping locally to shopping through DCBS. And I was surprised that only issue 122 has come out recently. You know, like I haven't missed that much in, you know, a 2.5-3 year gap. That's a little disappointing. By and large, I didn't really see anything that jumped out other than, say, Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos, which is just doing a free fall. Mike Norton mentioned on the forums that it was being canceled, which, you know, totally floored me, because I thought it was a miniseries, not an ongoing. I don't know what they were thinking greenlighting that for a monthly title. It's a good premise, good story. Giffen's a good writer. It's not something that's got legs, particularly in this kind of a marketplace, for the long haul. Do it as a miniseries, test the waters, move on. That, and I think the preview they put in the other books just did not impress people and scared a lot of people off.
So I think it's sort of safe to say that, you know, from a marketing standpoint, variant covers and crossovers and events work, and it's going to be a long time before we get a sales chart that doesn't rely on those things.
I agree entirely. If you look at the numbers for JSA, you'll see a huge jump of about 5,000 copies when Alex Ross starts doing the covers. Those are also tie-ins to Infinite Crisis, Day of Vengeance, OMAC, which, you know, goes into the whole, you know, big overarching storyline. I mean, these sales tactics work. They don't work for the long haul, but if you do them often enough, you can pop a title up. So I would really like to see a lot more of these titles just going up based on, you know, the quality of the book themselves versus these other kinds of, you know, sales. I don't want to say gimmicks and stuff, but sales tactics.
I get, and like you said earlier, you know, once we get the numbers for March for the 1 year later, for DC anyway, it'll be interesting to see down the road, like you said, give it 4 or 5 months, see where those numbers start to level off.
Yeah, yeah. Because, again, I'm hearing a lot of people saying, yeah, I'm going to try it out, see what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not all titles are going to be for all people.
Right.
And some of them, you know, may do much, much better. Some of them may quickly go back to where the title was selling before.
And then they'll just do 2 years later.
There are some titles I don't think you can do anything about.
Right.
You look at the Doom Patrol, where the John Byrne series was selling at the end, compare it to pretty much the same issue numbers on the previous Doom Patrol series, they match.
Right.
And that's a difference in creative teams, tone and style and characters of the book. I mean, some of it is the strength of the property.
I think Aquaman's the same way.
Yeah, I think so too. He's not a bad character, but he seems to have gotten, you know, stuck in that, you know, second-class citizen as far as the sales go. With the talk of a TV show that might help, personally, I don't think it will. The title I think they're giving for the TV show is like Mercy Reef or something like that. Something that doesn't even, you know, give a clue as to, hey, this is Aquaman. And typically, you know, those kinds of shows really don't do much of a sales bump for the comics.
I think that was a great title right there. Hey, this is Aquaman. All right, John. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, not a problem. Happy to do it.
That was our Mayo report for this month. And we'll be sure to bring you back.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Have a good night.
You too.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that wraps up this syndicated episode of the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I've been your host. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is podcast@comicbookpage.com. Thanks for listening.